Today, I have on the phone with me Alan Sears. He teaches sociology at Ryerson and is a longtime activist in queer and radical movements. He is a member of the Faculty for Palestine, and he has written about Palestinian solidarity, queer movements, the education system, work, and radical activism. Welcome, Alan, to Thank Migrant you Matters. Much. So take us through the story of what has been over nearly 40 years of basically freedoms being taken away from Palestinian people by the Israeli regime of oppression.
Yeah, and in fact, I would say even more than 40 years. You know, basically, what a lot of people associate in terms of the situation of Palestinians is that in 1967, Israel occupied the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem, which are Palestinian inhabited areas, and since then has had quite a brutal regime of occupation, and in fact one that is increasingly brutal in a lot of ways in terms of the way checkpoints are used and walls and home demolitions and all kinds of things like that that just disrupt daily life and create impoverishment and so on. And a lot of people are concerned about the occupation, which is illegal under United Nations resolutions, and the settlements that have been part of that occupation, which are also illegal under the Geneva Convention. But I think it's also important to remember that it didn't begin then, that actually in 1947 to 1948, when the State of Israel was founded, over 800,000 Palestinians were driven out of their homes. Many just fled out of fear with no notice. And since then, within the State of Israel, Palestinians have a kind of second-class citizenship. And in the territories occupied by Israel, it's less than that because it's not even citizenship. It's just basically being oppressed in it by the occupiers. And so it's a long history of being the displaced people who lived on the land, of loss of property and lifestyle and villages and so on. But even more than that, it's this ongoing regime of oppression that operates in many different ways in many different places.
Yeah, you mentioned the Palestinian people being treated as second-class citizens. Would you be able to talk about the two systems, the separate and unequal systems that are being enforced by the Israeli state, like the military law and civil law?
Right. So basically, it's very complicated in terms of Palestinian citizens of the State of Israel, because it looks more or less like they are equal citizens. They have the right to vote, and they have certain civil rights. That looks okay. And then you begin to realize, as you begin to look at it, first of all, a lot of Palestinians were denied that citizenship. So it's only some Palestinians who even had a right to that citizenship within the State of Israel. And even those who do have citizenship and have the right to vote and so on face second-class status in all kinds of ways in terms of access to land, access to social services, access to education. So on the one hand, there's that. And then on the other hand, the regime in the West Bank is, as you said, military law under conditions of occupation, and in particular has meant a regime of passes and checkpoints and so on that makes day-to-day life extremely difficult to sustain.
Mm-hmm. What is apartheid, and why is this term apartheid used in relation to the Israeli treatment of the Palestinian people?
Yeah, so the term apartheid originally developed in South Africa, and in fact it's a term in Afrikaans, which was the language of people descended from Dutch settlers in South Africa. And apartheid meant separation or separateness in South Africa, and was the official policy of separation of the races developed by the South African state in 1948, adopted as official policy, and it clearly created two classes of members of society. And that oppressive regime was fought mainly by Africans from within, but also by an international solidarity movement. So people often think of apartheid as a South Africa-specific term because it is Afrikaans and it did come out of South African history specifically. But that term has been generalized by the International Court of Justice and others to become a term in international law to describe systematic racial oppression, where one group systematically oppresses a racialized other group and keeps them in that subordinate position through an ongoing regime of rule. And while these regimes of racial oppression are not identical to one another, they often have key characteristics in common. And on that basis, it makes sense, given the second-class status of Palestinian citizens in the State of Israel, the conditions of occupation, the loss of original land, and all those things, it makes sense to apply that term to the Israeli state. And that's been done by the Palestinian movement, particularly in line with the campaign of boycott, divestments, and sanctions that's been launched by 170 movements in Palestinian society.
Before we get to what the boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign is, can you talk about the application of Canada's treatment of Indigenous people to Israeli's treatment of Palestinians?
Yeah, no, I think if we use the term apartheid to talk about South Africa and to talk about Israel, we have to be pretty honest that many of the same features apply here, and that the oppression of Aboriginal people in Canada matches in many ways the experience of Palestinians, the experience of Palestinians have had. The forced expulsion, the attempt to erase and to silence and to destroy a whole cultural experience, these things are certainly part of the history of the Canadian state, and not just the history, but are ongoing. So a lot of the terms that we use to describe what's going on in other places, whether that's South Africa historically or Palestine and Israel now, have important echoes of Canadian history. I think we always need to be aware that we shouldn't just be pointing the apartheid finger out and saying bad, 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 but also recognizing that if we're serious about fighting apartheid, that means fighting for Indigenous rights in Canada, and especially given how much they're under attack right now.
Mm-hmm. And can you also talk about how Canada is complicit to the illegal occupation by the Israeli regime right now, and has been in general?
Canada has been deeply involved as a kind of partner of Israel for a long, long time, as have, in general, the Western powers. And that relationship has involved military trade and all kinds of economic relations and not saying no and all that kind of stuff. But that's really, I mean, it's been there, it's a long-term relationship, but it's really been intensified recently, where Israeli, right-wing Israeli politicians have said that Canada is actually their best ally around the world. And we saw that, for example, in the period when the revolution was beginning in Egypt, when the Canadian government was, for example, even when the United States was beginning to say this revolution is a democratic revolution that needs to be recognized in certain ways, the Canadian government was very slow to recognize it because they are such a good and loyal ally to Israel. And so we see deliberately now state policy on behalf of the Canadian government to basically support Israel in whatever policy direction it takes. And that means that when we look at something like the occupation and the day-to-day conditions that are faced by Palestinians, we need to be clear that those are sustained by a set of relationships that include connections to the Canadian state and a whole series of Canadian institutions like universities and lots of others.
Right, and the Harper government has unconditionally supported, well, we've talked about how they've supported pro-Zionist and genocidal measures taken by the Israeli state. The conservatives, they've just been stifling pro-human rights voices at home, like the British MP George Galloway, banning him from entering Canada and all that. So the process of direct and deliberate systemic silencing, can you talk about that? That's going on in Canada?
Because I think on the one hand, there is the Canadian record in terms of international policy and the basic alignment of Canada with Israel and essentially following Israeli policy, even though by any standard of international law, a lot of what Israel is doing now is illegal, and even though it's increasingly clear that Israel is not serious in any way about negotiating any sort of reasonable settlement with Palestinians. So on that's the international front, but domestically what we've seen is effort after effort to try to silence opposition in terms of opposition to that policy. And we've seen that in terms of Jason Kenney, the immigration minister's statements year after year condemning Israeli Apartheid Week and the term Israeli apartheid, and saying that it basically amounts to discrimination against Jewish people to even use the term. And we've seen it in terms of defunding Kairos, which was a Christian non-governmental organization that did various kinds of aid, including aid to Palestinians. And it included banning George Galloway, MP, at the time, from
2009.
Canada. And a whole bunch of things like that.
Mm-hmm. So what is the boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign?
So basically, in 2005, a year after an International Court of Justice decision that ruled the wall that Israel is building through the West Bank, that ruled it illegal, and nothing happened. Basically, 170 different organizations in Palestinian society called on people around the world to help support them in and offering a tactic for nonviolent resistance to basically push the Israeli state to comply with international law in various ways. And that includes a campaign of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. So it means boycott at different levels, consumer goods, but also boycotting institutional ties. For example, when a Canadian university and an Israeli university have a research partnership, when a particular cultural person is acting essentially as an ambassador for Israel, it means divestment, which means that institutions that are invested in various corporations withdraw that investment as a way of protest, that those corporations that are deeply implicated in the Israeli regime. And it involves sanctions, which means basically under international law, saying if you don't obey the law, you will face certain penalties.
Mm. What is the movement of the boycott, divestment, sanctions like in Canada? How are we doing?
Yeah, and we are basically at a stage in Canada where this is relatively recent that the boycott, divestment, sanctions campaign is actually hitting the ground. It's been there in principle. You know, people have been interested in it, but it's really starting to hit the ground now in new ways. And what we've seen at Carleton University in Ottawa and at York and University of Toronto in Toronto is that students have launched divestment campaigns to try to push those institutions to divest from their investments. And they've targeted a limited number of companies that are deeply implicated in the occupation, either in providing military goods or information technologies that are used in checkpoints, jets that were used in the bombardment of Gaza, and that kind of thing. And so they've targeted four companies and are asking those universities to divest from those companies.
So there is criticism of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, and that this particular campaign that is very much like an institutional campaign targeting institutions, and it's a pressure campaign that has the ultimate goal to put economic and political pressure on Israel. But what about targeting deeper roots of the Israeli occupation and targeting those more directly, like capitalism and racism, to put it broadly?
Personally, I'm in favor of targeting racism and capitalism at their deepest, and I think many activists are. We don't make it a condition and of participation in the struggle, but certainly I favor that. But the question is, how do we get there? And to me, the way that struggles tend to start is with specific targets that are achievable, and then as people begin to organize around meeting those specific targets, the movement can get broader and the horizons can expand and people's sense of what's possible can change and new people can be brought in as activists and so on. And I think this is a very good example. The divestment campaign is fairly focused at this point, but the goal ultimately is something broader. And in my view, the way you get there is by focusing on specific targets and building an activist movement around them. And these are targets that are particularly implicated in the military and so on aspects of the occupation. And it seems to me to be a good place to begin in terms of something that people will recognize. Some of the other things sometimes people, unfortunately, like racism, which is so normalized day-to-day in this society, and I'm not trying to say that as an excuse, but as an unfortunate thing, to denormalize racism takes work, unfortunately. And I think part of the way you do that is by getting people active around various things that begin to get them, encourage people to ask questions about the way things actually are here.
I really like that answer, that these kind of actions are part of the ongoing and broader fight. Can you point listeners to some resources to check out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the places that I've learned the most, and I don't have the exact web addresses with me, but you can just put into Google, are the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid in Toronto has a good website that has a lot of information. And then the Boycott National Council in Palestine has amazing resources and also has a good website that has lots of information. And the Right to Education campaign, if people put Right to Education, is also a really, really important website for people who are connected to campuses to look at, because it talks about the struggle to sustain education among Palestinians and how difficult that has been and how much the occupation has attacked the right to education. And so that's another kind of source that I would use. And unfortunately, I don't have those web addresses with me, but people can just use Google to find any of those.
Sure. And after this interview, I can search and Google and let
Beautiful.
People know. So thank you so much, Alan, for taking the time to talk.
Well, thanks. I think it's amazing that you're doing the show and here for Community Radio, and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you. Bye, Alan.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
I've been speaking with Alan Sears, who teaches sociology at Ryerson and is a longtime activist in queer and radical movements. He is a member of Faculty for Palestine and has written a lot about Palestine solidarity and radical activism.